Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that I expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next interview, the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Henry Macko, is that correct? Quick pronunciation, Macko?
That's correct.
All right, fine. My secretary told me I was pronouncing it wrong, so it's... anyway, because Henry has written an amazing book. It's called The Illuminati, The Cult That Hijacked the World. And he's been studying this for a long period of time. I've seen his articles up on the Internet. But certainly the reason I asked him to come on this evening was because I've actually been sitting for a number of years on something which is probably a very important historical document. It's a copy of something called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And, of course, this is the plan for everything going on in the world today. It is truly a diabolical plan. I have a difficult time reading it because it is totally an evil document. It tells you exactly what's happening as far as the effort to destroy the morality of our country, to destroy the patriotism of our people, to capture the economic system and enslave the people of the world. But it attributes all of these things to a Jewish conspiracy. And, of course, I have rejected that there is a Jewish conspiracy, although I recognize the fact that there are Jewish people involved in this world satanic movement. But I was fascinating. Of course, I found a copy of this, Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion, among Colonel House's papers back at Yale University, but is a different translation of the protocols than any that are commonly used. And it was, of course, my belief, since I knew Colonel House was deeply involved in the occult, that perhaps this was simply an effort by the occult to shift attention away from this world satanic movement and blame the Jewish people for all the troubles of the world, where, of course, this is simply a cover for this truly satanic movement. Well, I certainly, Henry had heard, Dr. Macko had actually heard what I had this copy, called me to get a copy, and I got to talking with him. He sent me a copy of his book, and his book is fascinating. He has certainly a great deal of information here that I think everybody needs to read, and of course, he is coming from a Jewish perspective, but he doesn't believe that the average Jewish person has anything to do with this. But there is an evil people group that behind this, and I believe there is. I believe there's a world satanic cult and organization. I think it's very real. I think, however, it involves people from the, as he says, from the royalty of Europe, but I think it involves people from key positions within the Catholic Church, within the Protestant Church, within the Jewish religion, and these are just, well, these are all satanic people. So I'm going to let you go ahead and present what your thoughts are, please, and I'm very interested to know. I think you've written a very important book.
Well, thanks, Dan. You know, the people responsible for attributing the satanic conspiracy to all Jews are actually the Jewish bankers themselves. They basically use the Jewish people as their human shields. And I believe they, in fact, I know they sponsor anti-Semitism. They probably even finance the anti-Semites, because anti-Semites have this habit of generally speaking, blaming every single Jew for the deeds of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and a handful of world bankers.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, so we're on again?
We're on again. Basically, what we have, of course, this is going out locally in certain areas. They're playing, various commercials, but of course, this goes out live now in the area where I live, so go right ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, their tactic, you know, like even in the Protocols of Zion, they don't want to. They say we control our lesser brethren using anti-Semitism, but they don't go and out admit that they actually finance anti-Semitism and organize it. And of course, they do that so that Jews feel that they are persecuted by everyone and are forced to look to their leadership, which is financed and controlled by these bankers, for some kind of salvation. And this way, Jews are kind of herded and manipulated by their leadership. But I do believe that this conspiracy originates with these Jewish banking families. I do believe that. But just because that is the case doesn't mean, you know, 99% of Jews who are not bankers and have no knowledge of this conspiracy are to responsible for what these bankers do.
All right, fine. Well, but do you think that there will be an element, a satanic element, within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church?
Oh, yeah. You see, what I believe these bankers are Kabbalists, who I believe are Satanists. I believe Kabbalism is Satanism. And they've essentially taken over the world by killing or corrupting the elites of the Gentile elites, by infiltrating the Catholic Church, and replacing the leadership of the Catholic Church with their own nominees, and that's their tactic in every case. In the case of national politics, they replace the natural leadership with their own lackeys. And that's why you have Barack Obama, who's basically a lackey of the Jewish bankers, and all the politicians are lackeys. And so the whole Gentile elite is essentially in the pay. They're all collaborators. That's my view. But I don't think they're, you know, even though they talk about, you know, even in this Protocol Design, they actually talk about we are the chosen people. They do talk about the Jews, but they're really talking about...
Hold that thought here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Henry is simply laying out his position. Now, he's coming from a Jewish point of view, but he feels, of course, these Jewish bankers are really behind this whole world satanic conspiracy. And, of course, I believe, of course, there's a satanic conspiracy that includes Jews. So it's really more a matter of emphasis rather than that we all recognize there's a satanic conspiracy. And we do recognize that certainly there are many wealthy Jewish bankers who are part and parcel of this. But, of course, it is a question, where does it begin? Who's really in charge of this? I think Satan's in charge of this whole thing. And I was very pleased to see that reading your book, you really believe this is a satanic conspiracy.
Yeah, I do. We'd be comparatively well off if all the bankers wanted was power and money. But their agenda is satanic, and it's really quite pernicious and doesn't bode well at all for humanity. But through Freemasonry, which is Kabbalism, they've created a kind of rubric where they can embrace people from all backgrounds. Furthermore, they themselves, as you know, intermarry with prominent Gentile families, and so the British aristocracy is not recognizably British. It's totally British and Jewish. All these landed aristocrats would fall upon hard times, and they'd end up marrying the daughters of these Jewish bankers. So I believe that British imperialism is essentially a Judeo-Masonic phenomenon.
But, of course, this really, a lot of this goes back to Cecil Rhodes, who was himself not Jewish. Now, admittedly, he had some help, financial help from the Rothschild and a man named Abe Beit, who is actually they were very wealthy Jewish bankers, but they backed Cecil Rhodes, and yet Cecil Rhodes was the one who laid out this plan to create this British imperialism and eventually unite the world, and then after Rhodes died, they transferred the leadership of this to the group here in America, headed by J.P. Morgan and Colonel House and others, and of course then this became the Council on Foreign Relations, which became the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers. But there are a lot of people involved in this. We're not Jewish at all, and really,
Stanley, the fact is, everybody who's in a power of position of power or influence today is complicit in this conspiracy. Our whole, in my view, our whole civilization is a fraud, it's a fraud because the currency, which is the medium of exchange, which should be public, is actually owned or created in the form of a debt to these bankers. And they're using this debt to enslave us, to buy everything and enslave us. And everybody who's got a position of power, whether they're Jewish or Gentile or Seventh-day Adventist, is complicit. It's all pervasive.
You're absolutely right. And I think that on most of this, we would actually agree. It was simply the part that really that intrigued me was the part that the protocols had played and who wrote the protocols. And a large part of your book deals with the background of the protocols. Now, certainly we know that this was circulated in the United States by Henry Ford. Most people today don't know that, but most Jews are aware of that, and certainly a generation ago, everybody knew that Henry Ford was violently anti-Semitic. He supported Adolf Hitler, and he'd published the protocols here, and a book I think he wrote called The International Jew, and they were certainly going to indict the Jews for all the problems we had. And yet, of course, Henry Ford himself was deeply involved in theosophy and in spiritualism, and I've often wondered if the reason he put out the protocols and circulated that through his paper, the Dearborn Independent, was actually to draw attention away from this secret occult organization he belonged to, which was the Theosophical Society. Have you ever thought of that?
No, I'm very interested in learning more about Ford. I didn't realize he was an important member of the Theosophical Society.
He really was. In fact, I don't know if you know Constance Cumby, but she's one of the best researchers we have. And she lives in Detroit, Michigan, and that's, of course, where Henry Ford lived. And she had an opportunity recently going on a tour of his home. And there in the library, there was a whole section all full of books on theosophy. But, yes, Henry Ford was deeply involved in spiritualism and theosophy, which, of course, gives a whole different thrust, at least in my point of view, towards why he circulated the protocols, which was aimed at creating anti-Semitism. But then I think I will learn a lot from you. I'm just hoping we can carry on a good commentary, because I think you have a great deal of great information in your book. I'm really very impressed by it.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, this manuscript of the Protocols of Elders of Zion was in House's library, and the fact that you found it there is an amazing contribution that you've made, Stan. And I'm planning to, over the next week or two, read it and compare it with the Marsden translation. But I can already see that this manuscript is a little sharper and a little more explicit, and it's like right away I'm looking at the front page, and the title isn't Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it's Protocols of the Meeting of the Zionist Men of Wisdom.
Right. And Colonel House left that there. Okay. He left that in his papers, knowing that sometime in the future somebody would come across it, and it might be a key to an understanding of what was going on. He wasn't going to tell us what was going on, but he was going to plant that there as a key. So to lead a trail, I think, and perhaps we can follow it and have more understanding of what is really going on today. But Sidney, because Colonel House had an amazing ability to control men's minds. Now, how can you control men's minds? You have to have almost supernatural power to do that. And yet the people, of course, have gone over to the dark side to have supernatural power. At least some of them do, and I believe Colonel House was one of those. He certainly controlled Woodrow Wilson. Until finally Woodrow Wilson realized he was being used and broke off with him and would never speak to him again. And then he set out to do the same thing with Franklin Delano Roosevelt and probably would have succeeded if he hadn't, of course, died about 1936. But he played an important part in influencing Franklin Delano Roosevelt. How does one man influence two presidents, who live, several decades apart? Well, he has to have a very powerful force behind him, and I think that my explanation, and I think I'm right, is that Colonel House certainly had supernatural power and the ability to control men's minds.
Well, that and the fact that he was probably the principal Rothschild political agent, along with Bernard Baruch, during those decades, and essentially, they own the currency. They own the debt. They've convinced the goyim that they have to pay this debt, although they don't. And they basically own the media, and so they essentially create the perception of the world that the people have, and they can manipulate appearances to get Americans would do almost anything, and they did,
Well, they certainly manipulated us into World War I. We had no business going into it. They certainly manipulated us into World War II. We had no business getting into that war. But because actually, of course, you point out in your book, American corporations were financing Adolf Hitler and building the war materials, building his trucks and building his tanks and building his planes. And the average American family had no idea that American corporations were building the weapons of war that were killing American soldiers and killed them at Normandy and at the other great battles there in Europe during the Second World War.
Yeah, there's articles in my first book, Illuminati, about how they extended World War I for 3 years by essentially England and America would sell necessary foodstuff and armaments to neutral countries like Denmark, and they would all end up in Germany. I mean, they could have stopped that at any time and ended the war, but, you can't have a war without two sides. And then in the case of the Second World War, there's a good article about how they neutralized any opposition to FDR in 1944 by putting in Wendell Willkie. Was that 1944 that Willkie ran against?
1944, and here was a man who was a lifelong Democrat who suddenly registers in the Republican Party about 2 weeks before he has to apply to run for the Republican nomination. It was as phony as a $3 bill.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just a joke what these bankers have done to the American people. And what the American people have put up with, it's just very, very sad.
Well, let's get a little back. What I thought was a really important part of your book was the discussion of the origin of the Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion, because it is a primary document. If anybody doubts that there's a conspiracy, you only have to read that, because it lays out everything that was planned many years ago, and it's all coming to pass today. But the only question is, who wrote it? I mean, some people say it was written by a Jewish group, and other people, myself included, believe that this was written by the occultists to draw attention away from their movement and shift it off onto the Jews. And the Jewish bankers were part and parcel of this satanic movement, but then there were people in the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church and at every level of government behind this satanic movement. So I want, when we get back, to have Henry talk about the origins of the protocols, a very important document, but it's a very evil document. Well, Henry, you go right ahead. Why don't you give it the background of the protocols? Because I think it's vitally important that people understand where it came from, when it first appeared, and then, of course, how it was utilized in Russia to establish the pogroms there and turn the Jewish people against
Stan, right off, you know, we do have a difference. I believe they originated in the Mitzrayim Lodge in Paris, which is essentially a Jewish Masonic lodge, and that's where they originated. And now the eternal references are that's where they came from. They were basically stolen by a member of the Paris Mitzrayim Lodge and sold to this Madame Klinka, who was a Russian patriot. And she paid, she got 2,000 rubles or something like that from the Tsar and paid this guy, I forget his name, who sold the protocols to them. So that's the origin.
All right. Now, why do you think it was created by this Masonic lodge in Paris?
Because
is there any documentation?
That's where it came from. Because that's where the member of who sold it to Madame Klinka. That's where he got it.
All right. Did he write that out? How do we know that? I mean, I'm sure you have documentation because you're very extensive in your documents, but I would like to know, what the source of that, the source of the information, how we can document that.
Well, there are numbers of sources, but it's in the introduction to Waters Flowing Eastward. This is not really, I've never ever seen this questioned, that's where the protocols came from. Now, what has been questioned is whether they were somehow fabricated by the Russian Secret Service, right? As a forgery. They've tried to put it over that they were somehow a forgery of the dialogues between Montesquieu and Machiavelli by Maurice Joly, but I've read that book and they're not a forgery of that. There are some passages in common. However, I believe the protocols actually predated the dialogues, and that's where Maurice Joly got these passages. So it was, in fact, it was the dialogues plagiarizing the protocols. Now, internally, the protocols refer to a plan that we have been following for centuries. So it seems to me that the protocols are probably pretty old. Who knows? It could be thousands of years old, for all we know. And I believe they get revised and updated. But I think this game plan is a long-standing one based on the internal references, where they say we had better follow this, or all our efforts for centuries will come to naught. So,
I'm sure you're absolutely right.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I think this is definitely a conspiracy of the Jewish leadership, but it's a conspiracy against the Jews, because Jews like me, we don't know about it.
And of course, the Jewish people
and it's putting Jews, and always has put Jews, in jeopardy. Because if you have the Jewish leadership with this megalomaniacal scheme to enslave humanity...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Henry is simply saying that, look, he said to you, there is this plan. It's a diabolical plan. It's been around, and perhaps been around for many centuries. And in fact, there one place in the protocols that talks about this plan going back many centuries. And of course, as Henry says, here's this plan laid out by the Jewish leaders, the Jewish bankers, and that is actually, of course, putting the Jews into a terrible Israel situation. The average Jew doesn't know anything about this. And then this is used to mobilize public opinion against the Jews and to bring on persecution and bring on their mistreatment. And has been, the situation going back 2,000 years. But in recent years, since the Protocols has been popularized, and it was popularized in Russia, probably somewhere between 1903 and 1905. I've heard various figures, but it was really brought out at that time and then began to circulate within Russia, then spread to Germany. It was really one of the big things behind Adolf Hitler, came to America, and unfortunately, I fear, there is growing anti-Semitism in the United States based upon the existence of the Protocols. And when you read this, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it is a totally evil document, and I don't recommend that people really read it, other than you're going to have to take my word for it, that it lays out the plan for everything going on today. The only question that I think Henry and I would disagree on, and one of us, maybe both of us are correct, or maybe both of us are wrong, as to who actually wrote this. But anyway, it is a historical document that most people have never heard of today, although it was very well known probably 50 years ago. Would you agree with that?
Well, the general public isn't aware of it, no. I don't think so.
And, of course, basically, when did Jolly, there was this, many people believe that the protocols were taken from a book written by a fellow named Jolly. When did he write his book?
I think it's roughly 1862.
So this takes us back at least 40 years before the Protocols ever surfaced. And you've read the book, and you think that actually phrases in Jolly's material came from the Protocols rather than the Protocols coming from Jolly.
Because Jolly was a member of the Mitzrayim Lodge, too, and he was also a Jew.
Well, see, I'm learning a lot from you. These are some things I did not know. And I haven't read his writing, so I appreciate the fact you've read it, and you are firmly convinced that the Protocols did not come from that source, although many of the things in his writings probably came from the Protocols. Is that correct?
There are passages in common which have led people to, to claim that the Protocols were a plagiarism of this, but I'm saying he plagiarized the Protocols, not the other way around.
Right, and of course, we know the Protocols were circulated in Russia, and somewhere along the line, I think it was a fellow named Victor Marsden, am I correct? Was he the fellow who did the English translation that we use today?
Yes, he was.
And of course, the thing is, so here we have the English translation, the one that was circulated in the United States that Henry Ford utilized, and is certainly circulated by people who have an anti-Semitic bent today. What is so significant is the reason that that I had felt there was a great deal of significance to the copy of the Protocols I found in Colonel House's papers. Is there a different translation? Have you found any other different translations? Because I know you've been studying this a lot more than I have.
No, I haven't. That's why this translation is a very great interest to me.
Well, this is why I'm really want to have you on, want to get to know you, hope that you'll do the research on it. I wish I had the time to do the research, and I just don't. You do 5 hours of talk radio a day, you put out a newsletter, and you have to do all the things necessary to keep a network going. I don't have the time to do the research, and do you work, or do you have plenty of time to do the research today?
Well, this is my work.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm so glad it is. I mean,
yeah.
I love doing research. I mean, it's sort of like, trying to find a mystery and uncover a mystery. I wish I could do full-time research, but doing what I do and preparing for radios, there's really no way I can do the extensive research. So I'm hoping you'll be able to go through what Colonel House left for us. I think he left a clue intentionally. And I hope that you'll be able to perhaps answer some of my questions from it.
Well, I'm just leafing through it now. I haven't had a chance to read it because it is very similar to Marsden, but it's much more explicit and it's much, But in general, both translations they're not vague about the fact that these people think they're leading, their Jewish leaders and are leading the Jewish people. There's no question of that.
Right. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment here. I wish we could take calls this evening, but afraid we had an accident. Our telephone service went down, so we'll have it back up next time we have you on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Henry Macko, and we're talking about his book, Illuminati, the Cult That Hijacked the World. And there really is, ladies and gentlemen, there really is a secret societies out there. There are a lot of them. They're not just one, but we can call them all the Illuminati. They're believed that the continuation of the ancient mysteries and secret societies that were codified in the Kabbalah during the Jewish, enslavement there in Babylon about 600 years B.C. And, of course, then these have been passed on down, and they were picked up by the Gnostics and the Theosophists and the Rosicrucians and the Masons and the Illuminati, and they're being manifested and played out today, and I think we're living indeed in one of the most exciting but dangerous periods of history, don't you?
Yes, it's very disturbing. I'm particularly concerned about the that oil blowout in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm very concerned that it's been sort of swept into the back pages, yet it seems to be more serious than ever. And I'm also very concerned that the government of the United States, you know, they've got soldiers all over the world, but they can't seem to protect the American people from this attack, because that's what it is, in my opinion. It's an attack, but they just disguise this attack as a oil well spill. But it's an attack on the United States, and in my opinion, it's a deliberate attack. And the fact that Obama is not treating it as such means he's, in my opinion, complicit, an accomplice. I mean, the United States government should have swept BP out of the way and devoted all its energies into stopping that leak right away. The fact that it hasn't means it's following a pattern that we've seen with Katrina, that we've seen with 9/11, where, in fact, the government is complicit.
Well, I have no question at all. You're absolutely right. I mean, certainly, would find it very difficult to believe that they could be so inept and so inadequate unintentionally. And certainly everything points to the fact that whatever the cause, they've certainly allowed this to persist, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Henry Macko, and we're talking about his book, Illuminati, the Cult That Hijacked the World. Now, certainly nobody else could write a book on the protocols and about this this Jewish conspiracy other than somebody was Jewish. I wouldn't have them on otherwise, but I believe that Henry really speaks very well. He's very concerned. He sees the plight that the Jewish people are in. And this document, the protocols, and of course this gets into the background of the protocols, has been used as the basis for anti-Semitism. It has done so much harm in the world. This is the tragedy. It's not imaginary. It's real. It's circulated. I'll never forget. Almost, 47 years ago, somebody came into my office with a brown paper bag and came to my office and put their finger over their lips and slipped this bag to me across the desk. And it was a copy of The International Jew written by Henry Ford, and of course a copy of The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, because that was my first introduction. We're all looking for answers, trying to find out where the truth is. We hope we get closer to it as we get older. But I want to give Henry a chance to get out his website and tell people how they can get his writings and how they can get a copy of his book, because it's well worthwhile reading.
Well, the book's available on my website, henrymacko.com, M-A-K-O-W. It's also available from Amazon. In addition, I now have a sequel to Illuminati, which is bigger and contains even more information. That's called Illuminati 2, Deceit and Seduction. Anyway, both books are available from Amazon.
And does the second book have a lot of repeats from the first book, or is it completely different?
It's completely different.
All right, fine. Well, because I like small books, I'll have to admit, I like your book, and it's because it's, get too big a book, it's sort of, I don't think most people are going to read it, but I think they can read your book, 250 pages, something like that. A lot of great information. I noticed that you refer to a lot of books. You have a list of those books, lots of places you have numbers there, but I can't find anything to reference them to.
Well, the numbers are page numbers, so...
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, essentially, I'll mention the book, and then when there's a number, it's the page.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I appreciate your clarifying that. A lot of the books you mentioned I've actually read, and I think that you've done a great job of compiling information, especially if you used William Stevenson as a source. He's certainly one of my favorite historians. He wrote The Quest of Man Called Intrepid, and then, of course, we had the opportunity on a number of occasions to interview his wife, Monica Jensen Stevenson. And Sydney, you've done a great job of collecting a lot of information. I think it's so vitally important, the point you bring out, how the American corporations were building the weapons for Adolf Hitler, not only before the war, but during the war, the Second World War.
Stan, I want to tell you and your readers, though, about one of the articles I'm most proud of. It's an article that essentially proves that Bormann was... essentially, Bormann was the second man in Nazi Germany, the man who took the money from the industrialists and signed Hitler's paycheck, signed Goebbels' paycheck, signed Goring's paycheck, basically the money man, Hitler's secretary, the deputy leader of the Third Reich. He was essentially a British agent or an Illuminati agent. And there's an article establishing that he was run by the Soviets, but the Soviets are run by the British. So, in any case, that's in Illuminati. It's one of the articles I'm most proud of. And then in Illuminati 2, I have another article which confirms that. It tells of how the British rescued Bormann from the ruins of Berlin. In very convincing fashion.
And I have no question at all that you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a wonderful book. It's called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. It was done by a man named Manning, who was a CBS reporter. And he spent a long time tracking Bormann down. He was down in Argentina. And, of course, there were all sorts of stories they put out to confuse you. But apparently, he was heading this Nazi movement in South America. He was put there with the full help of the CIA and MI6 and this satanic clique in the Vatican. The book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and you probably are well acquainted with it, but I have no question at all that nothing we know about the Second World War is true, and that you're probably absolutely right that this whole thing, certainly there's very little difference between the communists and the capitalists. They all work together, and that's what's so hard for people to believe, that we have this big war against communism. We've got communists in our government, and now we find out just recently we had 10 communists spies working in America, and one of them we just let go. I mean, why would we let this spy go? Well, he confessed. No, maybe that was something else. That was one of the bombers. He was going to bomb America, and we just let him leave the country after he confessed to being part of a terrorist group that was going to blow up on New York or something.
Dan, the principle is this: you've got this very extremely powerful, extremely rich clique of bankers. Now, they've got the money, but they don't have the manpower to take over the world. So they essentially have to degrade the world by creating conflicts and wars so that everybody is busy fighting each other and killing each other off so that they're eventually exhausted. Then, at the same time, they infiltrate their agents into all the positions of power, and the whole house crumbles or folds like a house of cards. And that's what's happening. So they set up the Nazis. They set up the communists. They're behind the Taliban and the insurgents in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. Who do you think's financing them?
We are.
Yeah, exactly. We are, through our debt. And so, essentially, the object is just to get everybody to exhaust themselves till we finally fold exhaustively into their, totalitarian control. And that's what's happening.
Well, I think Henry Kissinger put it very clearly in an article that was in the New York Times in January of 2009. It was called A Chance for a New World Order. And basically he said, out of the chaos that's coming financially, the world is going to have two choices, nations. They're either going to join the new international order or face chaos. Well, I mean, who can face chaos? It's certainly rather do anything than live in a situation of chaos where there's no law and order and no food and no electricity and no nothing. And Henry Kissinger gave us the ultimatum. You're either going to go along with the program, and Henry Kissinger's an integral part of this whole movement that Henry's talking about. And
he's the CEO.
he certainly is right up there at the very top, and a very evil, totally evil man. But certainly, I agree with everything you said, and the American people have to understand that everything is a mirage. Everything is an illusion. The battle between capitalism and communism is as phony as a $3 bill. I'm sure you'd agree.
Well, yeah, especially since what we're getting is communism.
And, of course, anybody can tell me how the mightiest nation in the world, the United States, could fight a little country the size of the state of Mississippi, which is North Vietnam, and they could fight them for 10 years and lose the war. How could that possibly have happened? It's totally illogical, unless we went there to lose the war. We never went there to win the war. When you understand that, they sacrificed 58,000 American boys because there was the Gulf of Tonkin incident that never occurred. And then who's responsible? Well, McNamara said, he didn't know that the Gulf of Tonkin incident didn't occur. He was so surprised to learn it was all a fraud and 58,000 American boys are dead and a million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese. And who's responsible? Nobody's responsible. Who's responsible for our invasion of Iraq? Nobody's responsible. George Bush just made a little mistake. And who's responsible for the fact we've been fighting in Afghanistan for 9 long years? We're in the 9th year, and I don't know how many boys died today and how many boys died yesterday. More and more are dying all the time. But where's the outcry from the American people? That's what really bothers me. Henry, I realize you're Canadian, but, I mean, we have share a common bond, a common heritage between Canada and the United States. At least we have a little bit more freedom to speak out than you do.
Well, actually, I don't notice any difference. And Canada does have soldiers in Afghanistan and has had them there for, 4 years now and have lost about 200 men. So our situations are pretty analogous.
Oh, they are, and people in Canada are our brothers. We have so many listeners and supporters from Canada. We're really very, very pleased and proud that the people of Canada certainly recognize we're all in this together. All of humanity is in this. Although 6 billion people, on one side and just a handful on the other, a few thousand. But they're well organized and they control the wealth of the world.
Well, yeah, it's just really a shame that all of the promise of the human race is essentially going down the drain. The human experiment is destined to fail, all because we gave these private families control over the medium of exchange, which should have remained in the hands of the government. The government should be able to create money with no debt, no interest. Just create it and put it out there. Spend it into existence instead of lending it.
Well, because I remember, though, what Aristotle said. He said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with fiat money. as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. There's nothing wrong with fiat money, which is you're describing. You know, suddenly, as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings, where are we ever going to get perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings?
Well, you know, if men were men, you know, all of our leaders are essentially lackeys.
You're absolutely right. But it's always been that. 100 years ago, Mark Twain used to go around. You know, he'd give tours across the country, and he'd get up on the stage and say, well, let's imagine I was an imbecile, and then let's imagine I was a member of Congress. Oh, but then I'd repeat myself, and everybody in the audience would laugh. Because everybody realized how ridiculous our elected representatives were 100 years ago, and they recognize it today. Or maybe we don't recognize it today, I don't know, but certainly 100 years ago, that line always got a laugh.
Yeah.
And what a sad commentary. This is really why, of course, in America here, why our founding fathers, recognizing that you couldn't trust men with power, created something unique and different, which was the American Constitution, which limited the power of the federal government so it could never be used to enslave the people. And, of course, they put restrictions on so they couldn't tax the people. In fact, the federal government was really very weak. Its only function was really to take care of a national defense and, yes, to coin and mint money, but it was to be backed by gold and silver. It was to have intrinsic value, because in 1776 they knew what had happened before, under the Lombard system, you know, in Venice, and what had happened in Florence with their fiat money system, and what had happened in France and under John Law, and they knew in the early 1700s, and what had happened with the paper currency that put out the continent. They wanted something that could not, where they could not expand the volume of money, and at least you'd have to do it very, very slowly. They wanted to restrict the ability of men to destroy the value of the currency, because you destroy the currency, you end up destroying the nation, and that's just where we're headed. I think Canada is probably lots better off than we are. I think I don't know whether you've got a smarter government up there, or you're just not being the reserve currency of the world. You haven't been able to just print money with abandon. But when all of those dollars that are all throughout the world come flooding back in here, why, I fear that there's going to be terrible consequences in the United States, and the Canadian dollar will probably be stable, and I hate to think about what's going to happen here. The people have worked their whole life to accumulate a savings and certainly accumulate annuities and have bonds, and all of these conventional investments which can be totally wiped out when you destroy the value of the currency. And I feel that this is really what they're about to do. What do you think?
Well, it's just hard to know, because what we're seeing, you know, we're not seeing any inflation. What we're seeing is deflation. And paradoxically, you know, that makes money worth more. There's less money chasing more goods, right? So that's deflationary, right?
Right, because the reason we have deflation is because they have the Federal Reserve System is paying the banks here in the United States not to lend money. Now, that sounds incredible, but they actually pay them. They actually pay them interest on their reserves that they deposit with the Federal Reserve, because if they did not, then the banks would be lending money, and of course they would be this nine times multiple with the fractional reserve system. So they would just flood our country with money, and there'd be rampant inflation. But they've controlled inflation by paying the banks not to lend money, which, of course, is destroying the financial infrastructure of our nation. First time this has ever happened. But then we're living in unusual times. So you're right, we are going into deflation, but one of these days this whole system's going to break down, because they're going to have to start raising the interest rates, and they're going to have to stop paying the banks not to lend money. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, it certainly is. And the only consolation I have is that at least a lot of liberals are having their eyes opened with Obama. He was their great white hope, or black hope. And I think they really thought he was for real, but I wasn't fooled, as you can see from my book, which was, you know, printed when he was, you know, was written before he was elected. I mean, it was always clear who he was, and And now a lot of liberals are hopefully having their eyes opened.
But you see, the problem with everything is if people really looked at Obama as if he is in charge. I believe he is simply a pawn for the people who surround him who come from the Trilateral Commission. There are 12 members of the Trilateral Commission, key positions, and they're the National Security Advisor, the charge of National Intelligence, you know, UN Ambassador, the people who control the State Department, the people who control Timothy Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury. 12 people totally dominate Barack Obama. I believe he's simply a puppet, but of course we're going to blame him. You know, he's a radical, he's a Marxist, he's a, you know, is he really a citizen or not? We talk about all the extraneous things. Nobody will mention he's totally under the control of the Trilateral Commission, which is an arm of this satanic conspiracy that I think both Henry and I would agree is behind everything that's going on. And who's in the North American chapter? Why, the people who control Goldman Sachs, people who control Citibank, people who control J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon. If he's not in this year, he was last year. How could that be? How could you have this much centralization of power and nobody ever tells you? Because they also control the media, the Washington Post, you know. And we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Henry, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program and give the message you want to get out.
Okay. Tell me, Stan, are you there?
I sure am. I'm not going to leave you there all by yourself. Go ahead.
What is your demographic? What is your audience like?
Well, basically, in this hour, why we have stations in two stations in Michigan, we have two stations in New York, we have a station in Ohio, we have a station in Kentucky. On the first hour, the last hour, and I'm sorry I didn't have you on that one, we have another five stations in Colorado. Then, of course, we have shortwave, and then we have the internet, and then we have satellite, and the people actually take their satellite. So we have their own little home satellite, and they can actually listen to our program for nothing, and all sorts of other radio and video programs on this special satellite we are on. So we have a pretty good outreach. We got a lot of people listening on the internet.
What is the age demographic, do you know?
I have no idea. We certainly are not in a position to do an Arbitron rating. But of course, we know just from the response we get that there are a lot of people out there listening. And certainly very often on our afternoon program, as today happened, why, of course, a guest didn't show up. And so we just open the lines and we get calls so that we don't have, you know, we get calls from all across the country. It's amazing how many new callers there are always.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it.
And, of course, you know, but suddenly there are a lot of other people who are doing exactly the same thing. Maybe they don't have quite the framework that I do. They haven't studied the secret societies as long as you and I have, but obviously you've studied them for a long time, as I, and I think I have a fairly good grasp. I've been at this for 48 years now, so basically we have a pretty good grasp of what's going on. And of course, if we can get this information to our listeners, they can then begin to educate others. And of course, the most gratifying thing is that many of our listeners understand what's going on just as well as I do. And it's wonderful when they call in and they give me a dissertation. I realize they've been good students and they'll pick up and go on from where I am and probably come up with all sorts of facts I never have come up with. So that's what it's all about. We're preparing the next generation to pick up when we're not here.
Yes, good.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly want to thank you so very much for being with us. I appreciate you so much for sending your book. I think you've got a lot of great information, and I'll be very interested in knowing what you think after you've had a chance to go through Colonel House's papers.
Okay. Well, I'll email you.
God bless, and thanks so much.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Henry Mackle. And he is a PhD, researches these issues full-time, and he's done a great job of getting information together in his book, Illuminati, the Cult That Hijacked the world. And he's absolutely right. They do control the world today. And it is simply the framework of how this conspiracy fits together that we would disagree on. And certainly, we're constantly learning. And I believe there is a satanic conspiracy that involves people from every religion here in the United States. And this is an effort, of course, to destroy society as we know it today. So, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it to understand the true nature of what we're up against. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get the DVDs we carry on the secret mystery of America's beginning, very professionally done, three DVD sets. You get them separately or together. The second one is The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Washington, D.C. is full of occult statuary and art, and nobody's ever going to tell you that there are two forces in America. One is the Christian force, Judeo-Christian. The other is the occult. And believe me, the occultists are there in key positions at every level of government today. They have simply hidden themselves in what they're doing for years, and now they're coming forward blatantly. And our job is to get people to understand the significance of what's going on, because they hide their emblems in plain sight. You see them every day, but you can't connect the dots, and our job is to connect the dots for you. So you want to get The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. There's three DVDs in the set. The Secret Mystery, Occult Architects of Our Nation's Capital, The Eye of the Phoenix, and you can get them separately or together. Each one, two and a half hours. We do hope, of course, that you'll want to get the DVD on the Trilateral Commission we have, the DVD on the emergence, Constance Cumby, talking about the new world leader and what she's been told by people on the other side. And she's talked to them. Constance does a wonderful job, and we certainly appreciate having her friendship and having her as a regular guest on our programs. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will remember the October 17th meeting we're having here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay. We've got a great list of speakers. You're going to hear about the Muslim Islamic terrorist training camps right here in America. The FBI and the CIA know all about them. In fact, they're probably deeply involved in preventing anything from being done to keep them from doing what they're doing, because those Islamic radicals, many of them, of course, have been trained in Pakistan, are going to be creating civil unrest in this country when the word is given. And when it's going to be given, I don't know. And then, of course, you need to get the information on the Black Awakening. We have a four-tape set on that, a four-CD set. And these are people who have been programmed in special CIA mind control programs, and they will commit wanton acts of violence when the word is given and when they're triggered. This is not imaginary, ladies and gentlemen. This is real, because we're dealing with organized evil. So you'll certainly want to come to our October 17th conference. If you're going to come, you'll want to have to have a reservation. If you want to get any hotel reservations, we have a block of rooms, and give us a call, and we send you all the information. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention that we've had this last week some real problems. We're going to have to get a major new computer for our son, who does all of our graphics, and certainly he's the center of so much of what we do, sends our tapes out and CDs out to stations across America. And then today our telephone system went down, and that's another $3,500. If you're in a position to help us, we'd appreciate hearing from you. If you're not, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, for we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So we'd love to hear from you, and if not, why, please keep us in your prayers. And then remember, we are in the front lines of a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.